Amen. It was a couple of years ago. Oh, man, it's probably a lot of years ago. I remember I was decided I wanted to go and see if I could. I forgot even what the name of the TV show was. But it was a TV show that was based on motivational speakers. And the idea was that you could give these motivational speeches and they would, I think it was almost like a last comic standing, but it was for motivational speeches. And I remember going, and I will never forget the speech that I gave. The speech I gave was entitled, "Life's Not Fair." And it was great because for the most part, as I was sitting in some of these rooms and talking with some of these people, they had great things like, you are going to succeed in life, or, your plans are not going to fail. And the only thing that is blocking you is you. And, you just hear these things. I was listening to speeches and I'm like, wow, I'm really motivated by this. And then I get up and I give my speech that life's not fair. It's terrible. And ultimately, we're just going to die. And it was kind of taken a la Ecclesiastes. And I realized as I was preaching, as I was speaking, I was watching the producers that were judging me. And the whole time, they're laughing because I was kind of doing an anti-speech. I was going against the grain. That's what I feel like when we read Ecclesiastes is it's almost anti-motivational, but I think it's helpful. It really is, especially as he is going to now tackle the subject of justice. Now, who are my justice people in the room? Josh is justice. Heather is total justice. Like, if you're going to break into the house and you then get, you heard those stories where people break in and then the owner dumps a bunch of snakes on them and it bites them to death. It's like, yes, yes, because I feel just. Who here really struggles when justice is delayed or denied? Okay, so now we're getting a little bit more. Yeah. Especially in today's society, justice seems to be one of the rallying cries of America. And again, not to be having sweeping generalizations, but usually the younger you are, the more likely you're going to be for justice. The older you get, you start becoming much more like the writer of Ecclesiastes that just says, man, life's not fair. It's just not good. When did you first learn that life was not fair? I remember vividly when I was young, we would go to the refrigerator and my mom would say, Mark, pour out 3 glasses of milk for you and your 2 sisters. And so I would begin to pour it. Of course, what did I do with my glass? Yeah, it was first, and it was a little bit higher. Then I'm like, oh, look at that. We don't have enough. And then I remember the cries from my older sisters, because they are kind of whiny. And they just yelled out, that's not fair. And I basked in the glory of what my mom responded with. She said, life's not fair. Fair, get used to it. And then she yelled at me. And then from there on out, we would line the glasses up and we all three would do one of these things. And we're like, splat, oh, no, oh, shoot, now I got to do a little bit more over here. And because we want everything to be fair. And any realistic examination of life shows that life's not fair. Is it fair that we were born into a country that is wealthier than a lot of other countries? Is that fair? No, it's not fair. Like, what? Why us and not someone else? Is it fair if you grew up in a broken home with parents who were divorced? Is that fair? No, it's not fair at all. Is it fair when people who are close to you as friends die at a young age? I I remember when my good friend Tucker Richardson, he played trumpet in band. And I remember when we came to class and we were informed by our band director, Rick Luther, he said, "I got to tell you, everyone, Tucker Richardson has died." And we were all in shock. And it was all simply because he was walking behind where a car was parked and the car accidentally had rolled and it pinned him and it killed him. I mean, why him? Why not me? What allowed me to live and not others? We've talked about it with our car accident that we had so many years ago. We survived. But we know a lot of people who ended up in car accidents, they did not survive. Is it fair? No. We come quickly to the point that life's not fair, and we cry out for justice, and we really, really love it when justice is served, especially to all the evil people in the world, right? All the evil people, please give them justice. Now, of course, then, when you mess up and you pray to God, do you pray for justice? No, you pray, "Dear Lord, please give me some mercy." I really, but do you pray for mercy for other people? Often we don't. This is that tension that we live in between justice and mercy and how amazing it is that God does what he does. So let's dive into this. Starting at verse 9, the writer of Ecclesiastes is coming to some conclusions again near the beginning. He's going to come to a final conclusion in chapter 12. And again, I've kind of, spoiler alert, given it to you, which is life is terrible. You will die. Everything is meaningless without God. Both of those statements are true. Everything is meaningless. Everything is vapor. You're only here for a little while. You're going to die. I'm going to die. Everyone around you is going to die. Millions of people have died before you, and millions of people will die after you. And you're really not here for a very long period of time. And so it's really worthless what you're going to do in life unless you have God. And so he's starting to develop that concept. And he picks it up, verse 9, and he gets this really interesting theory going, but then turns his mind towards justice. Verse 9, "What does the worker gain from his toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in its time." Going back to the first verses of the chapter. "He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end." This is, again, one of those crazy things when you start thinking about the fact that we have a God, and the reason why, one of the reasons why we can know there is a God is because we have certain things built in us. Have you ever thought, why are you built with justice in your heart? I mean, do the animals have justice in their heart? I mean, does a bird who is building a nest in the middle of a rainstorm sit around and say, "Man, I wish I lived in Arizona right now"? Do the wild animals that live in Minnesota and freeze sit around saying, "Man, I would just like to be basking in the joys that is Florida"? Do all the alligators in Florida say, "I really wish more of those animals would come and live here so I can eat them"? Do animals think of justice? No, animals don't. Oh, yes, Catherine. That's a good point. So do dogs believe in justice? I don't know if they do, because sometimes I give a treat, and then there's other times, like, I'll give an extra treat to the really good dog, which is PJ, sorry, Jake. And Butch kind of looks up at me, and he's waiting for the treat, and then I walk away, and he's like, "Huh, okay." And he just wanders around back. So now, again, why do you think that's unfair? Is it because you think the dog thinks that's unfair? Does the dog then bug you incessantly until you, does your dog do that? Oh, interesting. Our dogs are just not justice dogs, I think. Yeah, maybe dogs have a little bit, but when you think about the world, we're different from the animals, and this is one of the arguments that he's making. We have built within us something totally different. We have a viewpoint of justice. We have a viewpoint of morality. Everyone, yeah, I guess I watch out when you mention dogs. Like, everyone's like, I'm going to protect my dog. My dog is beautiful. Your dog's going to die. I'm just speaking from what Ecclesiastes said, and he's actually going to admit. But again, what makes us different, this I think is really crucial as we think of life, that we have stuff built in us. You know, we have morality. Does a killer whale have morality when it's about to eat a baby seal? You guys are all like a bunch of saps today. Wow. Like, how dare you? When was the first time you ever watched a documentary on the wild animals and how they hunt and kill? Wild Kingdom. Yes, I do remember Wild Kingdom. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone young's like, what's Wild Kingdom? Google it. You'll find out. It's very fascinating. I remember when I would watch that and I'd go, wait a second. Why are those hyenas killing that beautiful, wonderful little deer? Do they do deer? Gazelles? Wildebeests? Well, yeah, zebra. Like when the lions attack the zebra, what do you guys all do? Oh, poor zebra. And I'm sure the zebra's thinking, oh, crud, I'm in trouble right now. But do the rest of the zebras even help out their brother? They're like, nope, you didn't get me. Sorry, Joe. Yeah, it's rough. We have within us something built. We have eternity in our heart. God has given us this interesting thing, and how we use it is really super important. So he said, eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. I know that there's nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live. Starting to develop, what is the goal of man? What are we supposed to be doing in this life? And though the chasing after pleasures, does that ultimately satisfy? No. Pleasures outside of God is nothing. Work outside of God is nothing. Family outside of God is nothing. Having a cute little puppy dog outside of God is nothing. That's what he's saying. So we're learning, how do we enjoy the life that God has given to us without taking it too far, but making sure that everything is rooted on God. And verse 13, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. So again, when you eat and you drink and you give thanks to God, that is part of what Ecclesiastes is telling us. Verse 14, I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that men will revere him. Now, it's very interesting they chose the word revere, because in the original, you could probably guess what it is. Fear. Yeah, maybe even some version. Oh, NIV 2011? Yeah. Interesting, because NIV 19... Yeah, so that'd be 2011. So NIV 1984 says revere. And then we get into the discussion of, should we fear God? Yes, Josh?
We fear him like we fear the ocean.
We fear him like we fear the ocean, yeah. Yeah, you have to have this feelings. I remember when we would start taking the kids to the beach, one of the things we looked at them, we put into them, that ocean is going to swallow you and eat you, and you are going to die. Now, why did we do that? To give them a healthy fear of the ocean. And then all of a sudden, you know, Jacob will wander down and put his foot in and say, the ocean didn't eat me. And so he's like, you parents are liars. And I'm like, watch out. And then, yes, he remembers that day, that fated day when we were at the ocean, and we were with the Gearings, and it was DJ and Jacob. I know Daisy and Josh were there too, but Daisy and Josh, I think at that point, they were like, the ocean is going to eat me, and I don't want to be eaten by the ocean. But there's DJ and Jacob, and they're swimming out, and I'm like, it's going to eat you! He's like, whatever, Dad, I hate you! No, he didn't say that. I'm just exaggerating. But it was funny, because all of a sudden, we watched as they were not that far from the shore, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like, they were far away. And Jason and I kind of looked at each other like, what do we do? I mean, this is a good lesson for them. They're going to get eaten by the ocean. They should listen to us as parents. No, we totally panicked. We jumped in the water and started swimming. And as we're coming back, of course, I now have the adoration of my son forever because I saved his life. I ruined my cell phone, but, you know, you are worth it, Jacob. You are worth more than many cell phones. We operate in fear all the time. When you drive your car, should you operate with a healthy sense of fear? Yes! You might die! Don't be crazy! When you have a little kid, yeah. Do you have a healthy respect for when kids are playing out in the front and the street? Yeah, you teach them there's some danger. We operate under fear all the time. I pull up to a stop light and then it turns green. Do you want to know the first thing I do? I'm looking both ways. Why am I doing that? Because there's crazy people in the world. So we learn how to operate under fear. And when we fear God, again, it's not a fear that God is just going to zap us at any moment because he hates our guts. But the fact that God holds life and death in his hand, he has this respect, this reverence that we have for him. And so we learn about stuff in life, and we learn it so that we will revere, that we will fear, that we will have honor and respect for God. And he finishes up, whatever is always has already been and what will be has been before, and God will call the past into account. And then he says, I see something else that under the sun. This is really, really good. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. This is that idea of you look around and you say, life doesn't seem to actually operate under some fair rules. Now, most of the time when we cry out that life's not fair, it's because we feel that we've been wronged in some way, shape, or form. We usually don't cry out for fairness when we're the ones who are the recipients of the extra grace and mercy of God and the extra blessings of God. So we need to learn what that actually means. But I am always fascinated whenever I watch some of those like true crime stories and you find people who have been wrongly convicted and incarcerated, and then you find out that they get out. I've often wondered, what does that feel like to be wrongly imprisoned for decades and then finally to get out? Would you walk around with a chip on your shoulder? I would think so. And I think you would probably be justified in a lot of ways of saying life's not fair. I just lost so many years of my life. Some of you have lost people in your life through death, and you're like, why them? I often wonder whenever we do a funeral and I think of them and their lives, especially if they're good people, really honoring of God. And many times, and this is my selfish part, so this is my confession of sin to you. Many times I look at them and I go, man, God, I can list off at least a couple hundred people that would be better to take from this world than that person, right? Like, why them? That's really not fair. Who here likes it when rich people get away with stuff? You know, it drives you nuts. You're like, here's some powerful politician with lots of money and lots of lawyers, and they can hire every person available to them. And you say to yourself, well, that's not really fair, is it? It's not fair. And what happens when you hear of someone doing something and then they get off and you're like, it doesn't seem right. And again, showing my age, I remember when OJ was let off because if the gloves don't fit, very good, yes. If the gloves don't fit, you must quit. People are like, what? And I remember thinking, like, everyone knows he did it. But they couldn't prove it. They couldn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And I love the civil trial. The civil trial happened, like, super fast. But the question still remains, what about the parents of those that were killed? Is there justice? No. Justice is one of those things, and sometimes we look at this world and we say, just life is not fair. And I think one of the reasons why we're becoming more and more sensitized to this whole thing is that life's not a movie. Life doesn't finish up in an hour and a half, right?
Because what happens when you watch a movie? You watch a movie, you have the main characters you introduce, and then there's some sort of conflict, and then it heightens itself to often usually some near-death experience, and then there's maybe some injustice that takes place. But you better believe that by the end of the movie, the good guy wins, right? Who here thinks the good guy always wins? Who here thinks the good girl always wins? As you know, I'm one of those people that love the reality TV shows, and they brought it back, and I was super happy about it. Amazing Race. So, yeah, Jacob, we got to still do that. I think that'd be fun. You'd have to do all the physical challenges, not just sit there and eat. But that'd be cool. I'm watching Amazing Race, and it was really interesting because it had this father-daughter duo. Is anyone watching Amazing Race? Okay, well, only two of you. Okay, good. So I'm not going to spoil anything. So there was this one that had this father-daughter, and they're doing this challenge. They're assembling bagpipes in Scotland. And as they're assembling the bagpipes, some people are like, how does this whole thing go together? I don't know how to put together bagpipes, but there's a little diagram. And so they're finishing up, and this girl, she did a really good job. And as she's leaving, there are two other teams, and they're like, hey, like, how do you do this? And she stops for a moment, she considers it, and she's like, okay. She goes over to the table, and she says, here, do this. Okay, yeah, do that. All right, you guys good? And then she takes off. And the dad looks at her as she's walking over and says, what are you doing? Like, why are you helping them? And she's like, it just seemed like the right thing to do. And he goes, but what happens if we're eliminated? And you get the sense that they believe a little bit in karma. And so they're like, oh, that was good karma, right? I did something good. Something good's gonna have. Do you guys operate that same way, right? You do something good, you're expecting something good's gonna come back to you. That's just the way isn't that the way God works, right? I follow God, and He blesses me immensely. No? Is that not how it works? Hey. Yeah, and that's how this young girl, she's like, I had to do it. And so the dad's like, well, you know what? You almost got the sense like the dad was like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Like, we're not going to get eliminated this round. And guess what? They got eliminated that round. They come up to the thing, and the daughter and the guy, they're crying, and they're like, that's it, we're never helping anyone ever. No, they didn't say that. But would you do that? All of a sudden, you do something good, something bad happens from it, and you were like, why am I doing anything good? If you do good to get reward, you're not doing good for the right reasons. Just the way it is. Why do we do good? Feels good. Brings God glory, because that's what God asks us to. We do good because God asks us. If we do good only because we want to get something in return, that's called a salary. But that's not grace. You and I receive grace from God not because we do good. So we learn that our lives are filled with injustice. It will not last an hour and a half. It's not like I'm going to go through the season, at the end of it, God's going to make everything right in my life. No. Sometimes that's not the truth. Sometimes the most honest people at work are the ones that are fired. Sometimes the most loyal of friends is the one that's ultimately rejected by the friend group. Life's unfair. And we learn that we don't do things for the fairness of it. We do it because it's right. Because God asks us, and ultimately, aren't we glad that God gives out justice at the end? This is a huge burden off of you. I think it's really helpful. I know people who are stuck in life because they want to cry out for justice for something, and they become so obsessed with it that it literally destroys their lives. It's better to say, you know what? That's not fair. God, deal with that. Because the alternative is not good. The alternative is, that's not fair, and I'm going to do something to right that wrong. Now, again, why do we do things? If you do things just to right an injustice, we've got to be careful, because sometimes even your best plans aren't going to work. We allow room for God to work his justice, his judgment. And that's what he ultimately comes to the conclusion. Verse 17, he says, I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed. So there's going to come a time when ultimate justice is going to get served. And isn't it great that we don't receive the justice that we deserve, right? Add up all your sins. What do you deserve from them? You deserve death and everlasting damnation. That's what you deserve. But God gives mercy. He starts by saying, I've got to punish that sin of yours. It's a bad sin. And so he sends his son so that he might be wrongfully imprisoned and executed as an innocent man in the greatest stroke of injustice, just to make things right between you and God. That's amazing. Verse 18, he finishes up here. I also thought, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Here we go. I guess I better be careful. I didn't realize I was getting such a pushback about the animals. What's an animal we can all hate to get? Cats. Good. Let's talk about cats. I know. Yeah. I'm sure I'm going to get a really nasty text in about 3, 2, 1 from Dave. Dave Prince. Okay. Yeah. Dave loves The Amazing Race, too. he's going to send something about the cats because he knows my feeling on cats. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Isn't that amazing when you think about it? Now, again, this is not trying to elevate animals to the level of human beings, right? That's not what it's trying to say. What it's saying is animals die, and you will too. You have no advantage. Like, can you just imagine? There you are, an animal, like, well, I'm going to die. And, you know, he's looking at you and like, well, and you're going to die too, if they thought that way. We have no advantage of them in the terms of immortality. We will ultimately die. And he says once again, everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. For dust you are, and to dust you will return. Yeah. You're going to die, and some of you will be cremated, which means it's a little bit faster. Your ashes are going to just mingle with the earth. Some of you maybe are going to be buried in a tomb, in a casket, and as time goes on, you will turn into dust. You're going to be gone. Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? Okay. Do animals go to heaven? You know, let's just say yes and all of you will like me again. Is that what I got to do? Don't do it? Yes, I have been asked to baptize dogs. What? Yes. I also got asked one time to baptize a baby doll. One girl was like, will you baptize my baby doll? And I'm like, it's an inanimate object. Are you stupid or something? No, I didn't say that. I'm like, oh, honey, I'll baptize you because you're living, but your dolly is just fine. It's going to go to heaven straight away without. Yeah, I lied to the kid. Okay, I'm sorry. Will animals go to heaven? Now, I do know this. I can answer one question for you. Are there animals in heaven? Yes, that we have an answer for, thankfully. We're like, We can very confidently say there's animals in heaven. A lot of the imagery that God gives, now again, you wonder, is it just being symbolic or not? But, you know, it does say that there will come a time when you will go and hang out with snakes and, you know, put your hand in there and they're not going to hurt you. I personally hope that snakes will also be upright, pre-curse. Wouldn't that be great? Walking around, right? Yeah, like here comes a snake. Like, ah, and I'm sure it's gonna look a little bit like Randall from, you know, from Monsters Inc. Yeah, but we also know that you know, the lion and the lamb, right? The lion and lamb are gonna hang out, and lamb's gonna be like, "Thank you for not eating me today," and the lion's like, "Well, thank you. I'm now a vegetarian," and then they eat plants, I think. No, we have no idea. And, you know, are there going to be cows in heaven? I sure hope so. Either that or we're going to eat tofu and it's going to taste like cows. I don't know. We're all animals. We don't know how the functionality of them going to heaven. You can get into a lot of theological arguments about this, but we do know there are animals in heaven as best as we can tell. So he concludes, what do? Everything is unjust. People are wicked. People get away with stuff that they shouldn't get away with. Even our animals die, and ultimately we die. So what should we do? We should live, we should eat, and we should drink, and we should enjoy this world that God has given to us because God gave it to us. And anything lived outside of God is meaningless, but everything lived for the glory of God has meaning and has purpose. So what should we do today? Go home, hug your animals, pray that they make it to heaven, even cats. Oh, sheesh. Eat a cheeseburger to the glory of God. Try to live with justice. Try to find things that can be righted. But also know that there's going to be sometimes things are not going to be just in this world. Because ultimately, life's not fair. And I am one who am so thankful that life's not fair. Because at the end of the day, God should punish me. He should destroy me. He should just absolutely wipe me off the face of the earth. But he says, I love you and I care for you. I will die for you. And you will be with me in heaven forever. Let's pray.